Good morning. It's always good to be here and see all of you. And especially since we were for a couple of weeks, it feels like, oh, it's nice to be back in this room. So it's just great to be here. I do have a confession for this new year. I am a horrible fan. When it comes to sports and these things, I'm just not very good at it. And I think part of that's because of how I grew up. I wasn't in the States. I had a hard time getting it. But even after I was in the States starting in college, I decided, okay, I'm gonna do this. I like sports. I'm going to be a better fan. So I was like, okay, I'm going to pick New York because I kind of spent more time in New York anywhere. I was in school in New York. My family's from New York. So I was like, okay, Giants, Yankees, Knicks, all of that kind of stuff. But even while I was there, I struggled. My little brother, who was really into baseball, he knew more about the Yankees living in Germany than I did, and I was like 30 minutes away. I just wasn't great at like keeping up with them. And I decided, okay, I can't do baseball. It's too many games. I can't do basketball. It's too many games. I was like, you know what? I can maybe do football because that's like one game a week. It's kind of condensed. I also was into games and I could do fantasy football stuff. And I was like, all right, I can handle this. Maybe I could be a better fan here, right? So I started trying to do it. And I was in New York. I was like, I'm not paying for like, you know, any of those NFL packages. I was like, it's not worth it to me to do that. So I was like, I'm not doing that. So I was like, I just watch the games that are free, you know, on like, I had rabbit ears basically, you know, on your TV. So I was like, I can do that. But I was in New York. So I was like, I could watch games a bit and do it. But even when I had that, I was like, I get about halfway through the game and I was like, why does an hour of playtime take 3.5 hours? I was like, I do not understand this. I was more of a soccer fan. So I was like, all right, whatever. I can get like a half in, right? Then I moved out of New York. And then I was like, I can't get any of these local games, but every now and then I'd get like one game. So it was like, I went from like maybe watching half a game to like maybe one game in a season or something. Then I moved to Virginia, and for some reason, I cannot get the rabbit ears things to work in my house at all. So then I was like, now I can't even watch the games. But then there was a couple years ago, they said, oh, NFL came out with an NFL app and it was free to watch things. So I was like, okay, now I'm back. I could watch a couple games. And then this year they were like, no, it's not free anymore. And I was like, forget this. I can't do that. Which is ironic because for the first time in years, the Giants have made the playoffs. And I'm like, I haven't followed them at all. So I'm like, yeah, go Giants, but I haven't really followed you. But the reason is what it cost for me to actually follow this team is like more than I want to do. And so I'm kind of like a follower in name, like, yeah, go Giants, but I really haven't done anything with that. And so today what we're looking at is what does it look like to actually follow Jesus? And are we actually able to say we are a good follower of Christ, or have we decided that what it costs is not what we want to pay? And so we're going to take a look at Mark 8. We're going to pick it up in verse 27. We're actually kicking off sort of a new series here for us. We're starting here in the middle of Mark. We had done a series in Mark in the summer, but now we're kind of having a series from Mark from now through till Easter. And so we're going to be looking at kind of what does it mean to be a follower and a disciple of Christ. One of the things that's important to note here is that in this part, the disciples, those that Jesus had called to be with him, have seen him do amazing miracles all over the place. They've seen so many amazing things and God giving parables and Jesus saying things. And so they've seen that. And this is kind of where we pick it up in verse 27 of chapter 8. And Jesus went on with his disciples to the villages of Caesarea and Philippi. And on the way, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" And they told him, "John the Baptist, and others say Elijah, and others one of the prophets." And he asked them, "But who do you say that I am?" Peter answered him, "You are the Christ." And he strictly charged them to tell no one about him. Now, this is important here, just to pause for a second, is that this is one of the first times that the disciples have really just come out and said to Jesus, "You're the Christ, the Messiah, the promised one, the one we've been waiting for." And Jesus doesn't deny it. He goes, "Yes, don't tell anyone." So they're kind of like, "Oh, this is exciting. We're right. We're following the right guy. This is the Messiah. This is awesome." But then Jesus says he began to teach them that the Son of Man, he's referring to himself as the Messiah, must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and chief priests and the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. And he said this plainly. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and seeing his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man." Now, just to pause here, I think it's important to remember something. Peter hears Jesus. So they go from this moment where they're like, this is exciting. He's confirmed it. He's the Messiah. He's the Christ. He's the one we're waiting for. And then his next words are, hey, I'm going to suffer and die and be rejected by our religious leaders, and then I'll rise again. And he's saying it very plainly. He's not using parables. He's saying it in a way like they cannot possibly miss his meaning. And so then Peter is like, whoa, 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 wait a second. God, Jesus, this is not how it's supposed to be. He starts to rebuke Jesus, saying that is not going to happen. You're not going to suffer. You're not going to die. You're not going to do those things. And I think the reason for this is that the Jews at this time, when they're waiting for their Messiah, for the Christ, they are assured in their minds that when he comes, he's going to overthrow the Romans. He's going to overthrow the oppressive governments that are there. He's going to set up the new kingdom of Israel. He's going to usher in an awesome kingdom. But their mindsets, what they understood was that he was going to come and bring about this earthly kingdom and restore Israel to like its heyday under David and Solomon. And so when Jesus is here saying, I'm the Christ, they're excited. They're like, yes, the kingdom is coming. And then he's saying, I'm going to suffer and die. And they're like, what? That doesn't make sense. We don't get that. And so Peter's trying to rebuke him, but then Jesus looks at him and says, no, 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 you are in error. You are wrong. And he says to Peter, get behind me, Satan, for you do not have in mind the things of God, but the things of man. And this is especially important because even in this moment, what Peter is trying to do is he's trying to give Jesus, he's saying, no, there's a different way. There's a different way for you to be the Messiah. There's a different way for you to do this. And it's a way makes you the king, that makes you reign right now, that puts you above other people right here, right now. And Jesus goes, that's not God's plan. He says, God's plan is very different than that plan. That might be your plan. It might be the plan that makes sense to people, but it's not God's plan. So get away from me. I do not want that. I will not choose into that thought process. And so then continuing, he says, in calling the crowd to him with his disciples, he said to them, after he's rebuked Peter, he says, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? For what can a man give in return for his soul? For whoever is ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him will the Son of Man also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. I'm going to pause there. So this is what happens. So he's given this declaration. They know he's the Christ. But then he's telling him, I'm going to suffer and die. That's what it means for me to be the Christ. This is what's happening. He's preparing his people. Peter's like, that can't be the way it goes. And then Jesus says, no, it is the way. This is God's way. And then he makes it very clear. He says, actually, not only is this what I'm going to do, but he talks to all these people with me. He says, look, if you really want to follow me, if you want to walk in my shoes, if you want to be the ones who come after me, then this is what it takes. If you're going to follow me, then you all must deny yourself, pick up your cross, and follow me. That's what it looks like to follow me. You have to deny yourself, pick up your cross, and follow me. And this is what he's describing for them. And to this point, I don't think they've really got that. They're just kind of along for the ride, seeing miracles, seeing God do things, hearing different teachings. And then here is God saying, no, Jesus says, this is what it looks like to follow. And so this is what we're going to unpack these two things really, or there's three things kind of here that Jesus says. So the first thing here is he says, you got to deny yourself, right? So if we're going to follow Jesus for real, this is what it means, deny yourself. Now, I think sometimes we just hear deny yourself, we're saying, what is that? How do I do that? What does that look like? And then especially in a new year, you know, people are making New Year's resolutions. We're not really talking about like, you're going to deny yourself that second piece of pie. I mean, that's not the kind of self-denial we're talking about. We're just saying, I'm going to withhold things from myself in some sort of like righteousness that I'm going to try to earn, that by denying myself good things, that somehow I'll get ahead. That's not what Jesus is talking about here when he says you must deny yourself. It's not withholding good things from yourself. What Jesus is actually talking about here when he's saying deny yourself, it's this idea of kind of like rejecting your life in a sense. It's more of an idea of laying down your life. So to deny yourself is to say, okay, my life is not actually my own. So if I'm denying myself, I'm saying my rights, my will to do things my way and to pursue the life that I want, I'm denying that. I'm denying my possible futures and dreams and jobs and career paths and family matters and all these kinds of things that maybe I would say, this is what I want for my life. We deny that. And we say, I will not hold on to that. I will not claim that. I will lay that down. Because it's not mine to grasp. Two things come to mind in 1 Corinthians. Paul says, don't you know that we are no longer ours, but that we've been bought with a price? That for those of us who follow Christ, get this idea that because of Jesus and what he's done, that we are now his, that we belong to him. Right? Actually, we see this lived out in Jesus in 2 Philippians, where it says, he did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but humbled himself and became nothing, taking the form of a servant. He emptied himself. This is the picture of what this denial means. It's not just like withholding good things. It's not actually about rejecting good things. It's about saying, my life is not my own. My life is now belonging to Jesus. It belongs to God. It is now somebody else's. And so the things that I might have done for myself, the things that I might have pursued because I wanted to, I'm going to lay those things down. I'm going to deny my own rights in that and just say, I am the Lord's. That's what we're doing when we do this. We say, okay, this life is not mine per se. It is the Lord's. And so I deny myself. I'm rejecting the rights to that. I think this is important because if we think of denial as the kind of the more the other thing of just denying good things from yourself, that's actually more like of other kinds of religious thought processes of just denying emotion, denying good things, denying all this, and that somehow that will make things better. God actually wants to bless us with awesome things. We can still experience love and joy and peace and awesome stuff, but the difference is how are we going about it? Are we promoting our own life? Are we trying to grab our life and hold on to it and grasp it and fight for it? Or are we saying, no, my life is not mine. The decisions for my life are not mine. I am the Lord's. My life is his. I will deny myself, my life, and offer it to him. The problem with this, I think, in our culture is this is not something we really grasp, especially in America. I mean, we have that whole thing called like the American dream. The American dream is like the counter opposite of this. Because the American dream is based on this idea that says what? You can pick yourself up by your bootstraps, you can work harder, and you can make a good life for yourself. It's all about us getting what we want out of life if we just work hard enough and do things. But this is saying, actually, you're not trying to make a good life for yourself. You're surrendering your life. You're laying it down and saying, to follow Jesus means my existence, my purpose, my reason for being is not to get the best life I could possibly achieve for myself. No, the purpose is to lay it down and say, here you go, God. Here's my life. I deny myself. And so that's what Jesus says here. He says, hey, if you're going to follow me, you've got to deny yourself. Okay, now, if we get to this place and we're saying, okay, yeah, okay, God, I get it. I'm going to offer you my life. I'm going to lay it down. I'm going to deny my rights. That's great, but that's only part of it. See, the next thing that Jesus says here is he says, I want you to pick up your cross, right? Now, I'm going to give us some thought process here because when Jesus says, I want you to pick up your cross, and if you read it in Luke, he says, pick up your cross daily and follow me. Most of us are not ever going to actually pick up a cross, right? So I don't think Jesus is here saying, I literally want you to pick up a cross, which was an instrument of death and crucifixion and horribleness. He's not saying, I need you to actually carry a cross, right? I don't need you to do that daily. And there's an aspect here that's kind of death, of dying to self, but I think that's kind of largely covered in this denial piece. But I think when Jesus is saying this, remember, He's giving this speech here in a context of saying, if you want to follow after me, if you want to be like me, then you must do these things. Deny yourself, pick up your cross. And for Jesus, the cross was literally a literal thing. He knew he was going to pick up a cross and he was going to die and he was going to rise again. And he knew this was going to happen. And so for Jesus, this is a literal thing. He knows, I am going to pick up my cross. And he's inviting his people to do the same thing. But for Jesus, too, the reason he picks up the cross is because that was God's will for him. That was what God desired for him. Actually, in Matthew 26, when Jesus is right about to be crucified and all that, he's in the praying in the garden in Gethsemane before he gets betrayed. And he prays this to God the Father. And he says, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup, crucifying, dying, picking up the cross, let this cup pass from me. So he's asking God, he's asking the Father, please find another way. Don't let this happen. I don't want to pick up the cross, is basically what he's saying here. But he says, but not as I will, but as you will. So when Jesus is saying here, even, I want you to pick up the cross and follow after me, he's partially saying here, I want you to follow me in doing the will the Father has for you. Right? This is the Father's will for Jesus, to pick up his cross and to die and be sacrificed. And so part of what it means to follow God in picking up our cross is to embrace God's will for our lives. See, I think this is one of the second pieces here of how we do this to actually practically make it make sense for us of picking up our cross is to embrace what God has asked us to do. See, because you can deny yourself. You can say, God, okay, my life is yours. Here it is. But then when God says, okay, now here's something I have for you, if you fail to act on that, if you fail to obey his will, if you fail to be obedient with what he's called you to, then we haven't really followed. We haven't really taken the next step to say, okay, I'm on this path. We've taken the first step, but the second step is to actually act on that which God has called us to. And so we deny ourselves, and then we embrace God's will for us. We embrace what he's calling us to, whatever that may be, and say, even if that is to the point of crucifixion and death, I will walk that road. I will walk the path that you have for me for till whatever end, because I'm going to embrace your will for me. That's how I'm going to walk. That is how I'm going to follow. And so he calls people into this saying, you've got to deny yourself. You've got to lay down your life. And then you've got to embrace and step into the calling of God on your life. Do his will for your life so that you can walk after me. Because this is what it means to be like me. Now, we got to remember this. This is all in the context of how does it look like? How do we follow Jesus? And this is what it means because this is what Jesus did. See, if we're going to follow somebody, then you come after them. You go in their steps. You become more like them. You're going on that path. And these are the things that Jesus did. He denied himself. He did not claim his life as his own, as something to hold on to or grasp, but he laid it down. And then he embraced the call of God on his life to say, I will suffer, I will die, I will do these things. And so he calls us into that. We deny ourselves, laying our lives down. We embrace God's will for our life by doing whatever he's called us to do, even up to death. But then we might go, okay, this all sounds kind of crazy. Why would anyone ever do this? But then thankfully, Jesus answers that because he says, for whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? For what can a man give in return for his soul? What Jesus is showing us here is whatever we think we want out of life, the harder we work for it, the more we strive for it, the more we're pursuing it, the more we make our lives about us, the more we lose our own life. The more real life and abundance and joy that can only come from God escapes our grasp. But the more that we release our life, deny the rights to our own life, and embrace God's will for us, the more we find our life, the more we save our life, the more our life is full. Jesus actually says that when he came that we might have life to the full, or life abundantly. Christ has come to give life, but for us, it often doesn't seem that way because it doesn't make sense to us in our cultural understanding of how I could actually gain life by giving it up. And yet that is the truth of what it means to follow Christ. It's the truth of how the kingdom of God works. It's sort of this upside down kingdom thing where the first is last and the last is first, and this idea of you gain by losing. But that's the Jesus way. It's not the world way. The world just goes, that just sounds like losing. But we have faith and belief that as we follow Jesus, that we'll follow him all the way to the end. And the beautiful thing about Jesus is that Jesus doesn't end on the cross. Jesus doesn't end in a tomb buried. Jesus ends resurrected and ascended as our living Christ. And so when Jesus is inviting us, inviting his disciples into this idea of following him, it doesn't stop at suffering and pain. It doesn't stop at denial. It stops with life. And so to really follow Jesus means we deny ourselves, we embrace his call, and we live. We live for eternity when he comes back and makes all things new, and we will have that. But we also experience a more rich, abundant, full, amazing life that God has for you and me right now, right here, as we lose our life for his sake. And he saves it and redeems it and gives us purpose and hope and joy that is only found in him as we follow him. This is what it looks like to follow Jesus. This is what it looks like to be on the path with him. It's not just about a bunch of rules or regulations or do this or don't do that. It's actually a path that says, I deny myself, I embrace his will, and I live in him. And it's not a yes or no, just check in the box. It's a literal following him that's going to cost us dearly, but rewards us beyond measure. This is the call. This is how we follow. The problem, I think, for us as believers in America in particular, is that for many of us, we believe in Jesus, and we're doing our best to be good Christians. But if you notice, when Jesus says all this, he doesn't say anything about being a good Christian. He says, follow me. And this whole path that we just described about following Jesus isn't about being a good Christian. It's about becoming like Jesus. And those are different things. And the reality is, you can believe in Jesus. You can have said a prayer and said, yes, God is my God, and he saved me from my sin. You can say all that and yet not really be following after him like this. Let me explain it like this. When I was a freshman in high school, in ninth grade, I tried out for the soccer team. I didn't think I had a prayer of making it, but I made the team. I was all excited. I was ecstatic. And I had fun on the team. But then I realized I was so low on the totem pole that I never played in any game, ever. I mean, the coach just made it very clear from the outset. He was like, you're never playing. Like, I didn't even dress. Like, I never even had, like, the uniform. If they traveled, I didn't even really get to travel with them. But I was on the team. You know, I was on the team, okay? And so I had fun being on the team, but it just wasn't quite the same because it was basically like, this is basically just like I'm the practice dummy. Like, I'm somebody that can be on the other, makes up the 22 players you need on the roster so that you can actually do this, right? And that was my experience in ninth grade. And it was fun, but it was like, I mean, I had friends who were like, are you actually on the team? I was like, yes. Yes, I am on the team. Like, how come we don't see you, like, even sitting on the bench? I was like, well, they only have so many uniforms, and I don't know. But I am on the team. Next year, I actually got to play in some games and then eventually work my way up where I was actually on the starting team. And then my experience was totally different. I was like, not only am I on the team, like, I'm a part of this team. Like, I'm in the game, and this is fun. And this is exciting. And every week, I was, like, getting ramped up for it. And it was such a different experience for me because I was there in the team. And I think this is kind of what our Christian lives are like a lot of times. See, I think some of us were like me as a ninth grader. We're on the team. We're in the family of God, but we haven't actually started playing yet. We've never played a game. because we've never actually started following. We said a yes. We said, I want to be in. I want to be part of your family. But we've never denied ourselves. We've never embraced God's call for our life. And so we haven't really started living. Because we haven't done what God has called us to. And so we might be on the team. You might get to live forever someday, but you are not getting to experience what it feels like to play in the game. And I think there's other of us who have started this process and we go, man, this life is awesome. This is fun. This is exciting. Man, it takes a lot of work. Denying myself is hard. Embracing the call of a God that leads me in a path that maybe I would not have chosen on my own is difficult, but is it worth it? Oh, yes. And as we start this year, I just feel like God has for us this question of, do you actually want to follow? Like, do you actually want to follow me? Do you actually want to get in the game and play? Or do you just want to be able to say I'm on the team? Because they're different. And I have more for you. I have a spot on my team if you want it. I have in the Bible, he says that he has prepared in advance good works for all of us to do. He has plans. He has purposes. He has life. He has so much for all of us to embrace and do in his life as we follow after him. But he won't force you. He'll let you just be like, yeah, I'm on the team. And he might be like, man, I got a great path here for you. But will we actually follow? I think part of the problem with this is when it comes to this denying, when it comes to this God's embracing, all this kinds of stuff of embracing his will and denying ourselves and living, is that this might actually mean, wow, that career path that I've been searching, that promotion that I've been searching, maybe God is saying, that's not my plan for you. Maybe it is his plan for you. Have you asked? Have you listened? Have you even wondered, God, what do you want to do with my life? Or have we just said, I'm going to do whatever I want to do with my life and throw God in the mix? See, because I think when we do whatever we want to do with our life, that's not denying our life. That's actually just us doing us and then putting God in the mix. That's a recipe more for just being on a team that you never get to play on. I just want you to know that following God is worth it. Following God is the most exciting thing you could ever do with your life, but it will cost you. It's not easy. And for some of us, we're just not willing to pay that cost. It's like me following the Giants. You might be like, eh. But I want to tell you, Jesus is worth it. And following him is worth it. It's not really about working harder. It's about laying your life down and just saying yes to whatever he asks you to do. And then see where he takes you. I think for some of us, maybe you've never followed God. Maybe you've never really been there. All you have to do is start saying, okay, yeah. I want to follow you. I'm going to do these things. But for many of us in this room, I know we've been following God for a long time. And maybe we've done something like this denial and embracing God's will in the past. But maybe it's been a while. Maybe somewhere along the way, we just got caught up in life and busyness with kids and work and other things, and we're just kind of on our own path. Start this year, I just want to invite you to say, you can embrace this again. You can walk in this again. And it starts by laying our lives down and saying, my life is not my own, it's yours. And then it starts again with, I'll do what you say. Even up to picking up a cross and following you, I'll do whatever you say so that I might live with you and follow after you. So what we're going to do is I'll actually invite the worship team back up. We don't really do this that often, but I just want to give you the opportunity. Sometimes with things like this, symbolism has meaning, it has value, it's helpful. It's not like it's some magic thing, but it's just helpful for us as we process, as we do things with the Lord, sometimes to do things physically in actual acts. And so part of what we did in worship and, you know, the Jewish and all of this, they had altars, they had things where they would lay their altar, their offerings at the altar and say, here's my offering. So obviously we don't have actual altars, but this front area we're going to treat as like the altar today. Okay? So in a little bit, I'm going to walk us through this, but I think for some of us, it's going to be helpful to actually, if you really want to follow after God, if you're at a place where you can recognize, I have not really been following him, I've not really been denying myself, I've not really been embracing his call, for some of us, it's going to be helpful to come up and just, even if we're just with your hands kind of all, like acting like you're putting something down, to come up and just lay down your life. To start this year off saying, I'm going to deny myself, God. I'm going to lay down my life here at the altar before you and just say, my life is yours. I deny that. And for some of you who are there in a minute, or I'm going to give that opportunity for you. For those of you who might be coming up to the altar and to kind of have an active facing, or maybe you come and accept to your heart or something God's will for your life, you're saying, I want this. I want what you have for me. I will do whatever you say. I want your plan for my life. And you come and you take that and you say, yes, I will do this. Now, the reality is sometimes we have these things, and I've been talking a lot, obviously. But we need a time to just listen. So what we're going to do, that's coming up, and we're going to weave communion into that part, okay? But just for a minute here, just as there's some light strumming going on, I just want to invite you, as I open this in prayer, just to listen and think about where your heart is at. Are you actually following Jesus? Are you actually playing in the game? And if not, why not? Jesus, we just ask that you would come right now. We ask for your spirit to be with us this morning. We know that you are here. And I just ask, God, would you reveal to all of us what you want to do in this moment? God, if we have been not really following you, would you reveal that to us? Would that just stand out to us? And if there are things that you are specifically asking us to lay down at your altar this morning, would you help us to do so? If there are ways that we need to deny ourselves this morning that we've been unwilling to do, would we be willing to do it today? God, if there are things that you are calling us to this morning, would we hear you? God, if there is a will for our lives that you have for us that we have not embraced, would you help us embrace it this morning? And so let's just take a moment. Just listen to the Lord. Hear what he has to say to you about these things, and we'll continue.